Welcome to Authors on Tour Live, a weekly podcast for people who love to hear about books from the authors themselves. Presented by Belco Credit Union. Visit www.belco.org/authors.asp to learn more about how Belco can help you. My name is Darren Fote, and today we are podcasting live from the Tattered Cover Bookstore, one of the premier independent bookstores in the nation, with three locations in the Metro Denver area. You can visit www.authorsontourlive.com for a complete list of upcoming podcasts. Wait a minute, it's time to begin.
Welcome, and on behalf of the Tattered Cover, thank you for your support of our independently owned bookstore. We appreciate it. And I'm not going to say anything else. I'm just going to say, please join me in welcoming Christopher Moore.
Just lower your expectations. Oh, goodness. Thanks for coming, you guys. I'm sorry about the people that are around the corner. Love you, mean it. Wow, a bunch of people. Who's never heard me speak or do whatever this is before? About half. Okay, good to know. So you won't know that I'm telling the same story I told last time. Well, let me sort of, you know, the orientation part is, this may have been called a reading. Everybody knows I don't read at my readings, so they started calling them signings. So I don't sign at my signings. So this is an event, I guess, where something's supposed to happen, and it's not. Let me give you an idea. This is sort of a way to give you a context of what's going to happen here today. Is basically, my events are sort of, they're like sex. Basically. Well, you know, basically someone introduces me, and then I apologize for a half an hour, and then you all line up, and I thank you for coming, and you go away thinking I smell vaguely of Sharpie marker. So that's what's going to happen. Wow, this has been a big tour. It's great to be, you know, Denver is my peeps, but as much as it's great to see you guys, it's so great to not be in Phoenix. Fuck. I mean, now that said, my people in Phoenix are the ones that are kind of cool, but Sarah Palin was in Arizona yesterday at the same time I was, so, you know, it was a battle. And Karl Rove was there the day before. And what's funny is the Arizona people, let's make fun of them. Is the way Arizona like picks their battles. They're like, you know what? No Martin Luther King Day. It's like, we do not want a friggin' day off of work. But that said, and no daylight savings time. I do not want the government getting his hands all over my dark. So I think since there was so much success with that, we're teabaggers thing, they're going to start a new party, both protesting Martin Luther King Day and Daylight Savings Time called the Darkie Party. And and I'm sure they don't see anywhere where that could go wrong. I'm not even going to open the blinds. I've really, pick your battles, you guys. It's Martin Luther King Day and dark. So it's nice to not be there. Even when it's nice weather there, it's not. It's just sort of annoying. They should have, you know, they have the pollution index in Los Angeles. They should just have it friggin' annoying in Phoenix. I'm here to talk about a vampire book. You guys were probably here, some of you, half of you were here when I talked about You Suck. You know, there wasn't really much to say. It's a friggin' vampire book. Here's another one. So, any questions? No. So I'll just sort of catch you up on what's going on with me, because that's why you're here, of course. I'm hiding. I have like there's security. but you can take them. But it's, you know, we hire security, but we're afraid to give them anything sharp or, you know. Anyway, so I've been in recovery for narcissism. You know, not drugs or anything. Although I know this is the first time in like 10 years that I've been here and haven't had a cold. And everybody from Seattle to Boston thought that I had a NyQuil problem. And to be honest with you, you're all a little less wiggly than you normally are. So I'll try to get congested by the time I'm signing books. It sounds like it's working for you. But yeah, so I, you know, I'm just working on myself a little bit for this narcissism thing and taking a little me time. You know, because now I'm all famous. Look at how many people are here. You guys remember when it was like the people that worked at Tattered Cover and, you know. And, you know, they're like, okay, let him sign a couple of books. So, again, thanks. But, you know, now I'm, I decided I would get a little work done. Because you're supposed to once you get successful and stuff. So, you know, I had some implants. Have you guys ever heard of nudicles? And nudicles are basically when you get your dog neutered, it's what they put in so he doesn't feel, you know, quite so unequipped. They're silicone dog balls is what they are. So I thought, you know, I don't really want any other kind of work done. So, you know, I got seven of those. You know, which... You know, it improves your confidence, but the, what really makes it worth it is when you go through the enhanced security scanning at the airport. The guy whose job it is to look at your junk is like, whoa, you know, so. And then I was talking about this in Seattle because I, you know, like to talk about that. And this veterinarian came up and said, you know that they have nudicles for horses. I'm like, now you tell me. And I go, well, how big are horse nudicles? And this is exactly how he showed me. He goes, they're about like this. And I had the feeling that that guy had done like a size test himself, you know. So when I come back for the next book, if I'm like walking a little funny, you know what happened. It would be kind of cool to have all the horse nudicles. You could just run into walls and come off of it like a Super Bowl. But anyway, so I'll talk about the book. I'll get to it. And we'll do questions since we have new people. There's some of you going to want to talk about stuff that I've talked about before, and we'll just make the other people sit through it. Let's see. I've been meeting famous people because, you know, I'm famous now and stuff. It's, I mean, I've got that great fame of I have to tell people who I am, and then they go, oh, you're kind of famous. or do you have any ID? That's the other thing. I went into a bookstore in Chicago to sign books, and the guy goes, I go, I'm Christopher Moore. I'm here to sign my books. At, by request, by the way, they had called. And he goes, do you have any ID? And I'm like, dude, there's 200 books with my picture on it right there. Seriously. And I go, there, this may be one of the reasons that booksellers are in trouble. that guy, that one guy, I'm not saying, you guys are awesome. Yeah. I'm going back there tomorrow, and I'm like, you know, look him up, and I go, hey, bitch, how about now? You want to be looking for my name on the New York Times bestseller list as well. Anyway, so I met not really famous people. I met Slash from Guns N' Roses, at BEA 2 years ago. Last year? Could have been. It was in the mini darks ago. And, you know, he's not that famous. He's, like, famous enough that we're going to see him on a reality show for people in recovery soon. But he had done a book for HarperCollins, and I was standing there with a friend of mine who's you've got to stop doing that. They're making me a scarf and they're trying to get it done before I get done talking. No, I'm sorry. I know. It's a thing. It keeps you from smoking. They're knitting. They're knitting, and it's sort of very Amish. They knew about nudicles before I even said, no, we carve them out of wood. I'm knitting them a nudicle cozy right now. Anyway, so I'm standing there with Slash and this friend of mine who's a salesman for Guns N' Roses, and there was this notorious editor at HarperCollins who did all of the skeezy books, like the wrestlers and the porn stars and the OJ book and all that, and she had been fired. And I was saying, you know, it's really different at BEA since she's not here. And Slash goes, well, why? And I go, well, she did like all the porn star books and stuff, so all those people aren't with the HarperCollins group. And he goes, like who? And I go, you know, like Tracy Lords. And Slash goes, well, I did her. And my friend Mike goes, yeah, but she did the Julie Andrews book too. And Slash, without missing a beat, goes, yeah, I did her too. And I go, you shagged the Poppins? So he totally went up in my esteem. I'm like, dude, not because he shagged the Poppins, but because he came up with that line, just bam, like that. So anyway, that was my brush with fame recently. I got a new hat. I was really nervous about this tour, so I thought, well, maybe if I get a new hat. So you've noticed I got a new look. I got this hat. Yeah, thank you. I know. And then I felt better for about 20 minutes, and then I started really getting anxious about losing my hat. So I had to go get a backup hat. I went to North Face in San Francisco, and it's four stories, and I went up the escalator instead of taking the steps, and they were like, we're not going to sell you anything. Evidently, they expect you to actually make an ascent on the North Face. If you take the escalator, you don't deserve to buy. So I totally have no backup emergency hat if something goes wrong. Okay. I have notes here, which I've ignored for most of this tour. And people are taping this now and putting it on YouTube and stuff, and then they go to the next thing and there's like, is this the same guy? Okay, so I'll talk about this book that I wrote called Bite Me. I didn't want to write a vampire book in the first place. I wanted to write a book about an old blues player from Clarksdale, Mississippi. This was going to be the second book of a contract when I did Coyote Blue back in the Civil War time. And the second part of the contract, when you get a book contract like that, says, you know, the book, like Coyote Blue, and they go, and a second book to be agreed upon, title to be agreed upon. And so the agreement I would submit five ideas, and they would pick the one that they thought would go best to work. And that happens actually more often in the film business than it does in publishing. But I didn't have a big track record, so they were like, he can't be trusted, which turns out is true. So basically, I had, years ago, I was working for this radio station in Cambria, California, KOTR, K-O-T-R, which was Wet and Furry Radio for the Central Coast. And I had, and you could just do anything on there because there was no qualifications for being on the radio there. This is an absolute true story. It was such a low bar that if someone would call in sick for their shift, the station manager would go out on Highway 1 and pick up hitchhikers and bring them back to the station, teach them how to work the turntables and the switches and stuff. Go, you're on, you know, so you know, not really a high pressure job. So I was writing, you know, these little stories and reading them on the air until people would call and say, "Shut up," which they did. And one of them was about this kid who has a girlfriend who's a vampire, and he loves her, but he's afraid of her, so he puts her in the freezer until he can figure out what he's going to do. That was like a 2-minute thing. So when I came time to submit ideas, I had this really fleshed out blues book with like 3-page long synopsis. And then I had like 4 of them that were one line, one of which was, there's this kid, he has a girlfriend and she's a vampire and he's afraid of her, he puts her in the freezer. You probably won't want me to write this one. So sure enough, my editor calls me from New York and says, we want you to do the vampire book. And so I did. And a vampire book isn't really a medium for big themes and ideas and so forth. So I just put 2 smartasses on stage and said, go. And it was way fun to write because of that. You know, because Coyote Blue, if any of you have read it, is sort of it's theme driven. You know, it's got all that stuff that they tell you in college literature classes that stuff is supposed to have. So I use that software that put, themes and, Great American Novel 2.0. I spoke at what day is it? Sunday? I spoke at Microsoft on Wednesday Redmond, Washington. And I really expected it to be like the evil empire going in there. It's like I was the assault on the ring in the movie. It's not. It turns out they're pretty nice. But they still wouldn't tell me like how to take the highlighting out of a whole document at one time. I swear to God, I had a room and there was 100 geniuses in it because I was speaking at the Microsoft Research Facility, and the guy comes who is my host runs the Microsoft Research Facility, and he goes, I oversee 800 scientists, all of whom are basically geniuses in their field, because they do all kinds of shit that's not just making your computer not work right. They, I didn't even see those people. These were guys who were trying to cure AIDS and stuff, And so my first question was, how do I take the highlighting out of a whole document at one time? There was nobody in the room that knew how to do it. And I'm like, well, you go ahead and cure AIDS and shit and call me when you figure out the highlighting thing, So I don't have a story, but that's true. I spoke at Google too, which was I had absolutely nothing to say because I was like, look, when I don't know what I'm going to say, I ask you guys. So, But I did have one issue with them. I was like, okay, I just want you to know, I am never feeling lucky. That's just wasted space on my screen, I want, if you put a button up there that says I'm feeling shitty, I will use that one. Or, I'm feeling a little morose, ding, but I'm feeling lucky is a useless button for me. It's never happened. Which they're not going to fix, turns out, either. So then they're on my shit list along with Microsoft. Because I asked them, I go, look, you guys know everything. First, how do you take the highlighting out of a whole document at one time? And second, where's my wallet? Neither of which they knew. So, all that technology and world domination is not doing them any good at all. What was I talking about? Okay, so, I wrote this vampire book. And the same guys that told me that this would be the great idea for me to do, they printed 9 copies of it. And, it was nice because my mom bought one. And then I got 2 for being the author, so I felt special. And then they remaindered 6. And I had always wanted to do a sequel for it, but you can't do a sequel to a book that sells, or almost sells 6 copies. So I had to sufficiently wait for my career to recover until you guys would just buy anything that I wrote, And that's when I wrote You Suck, and I knew I was going to do this one too. Let me see where I am time-wise. Okay, so sort of the difference between this one and the last one. Last time I was here, I talked about how I got at this book is told, a large part of it, by Abby Normal, who is a 16-year-old goth girl. And as you might guess, that voice doesn't necessarily come that naturally to me. So I went on goth blogs, vampirefreaks.com and all these places, and about 40 minutes every day before I was going to write an Abby Normal scene, I would read these goth blogs. And my girlfriend would come in and look at the screen and go, the FBI is just going to burst through the door any minute, right? And I'm like, like, no, no. I said, I'm not interacting. I'm just lurking like a creepy perv. And so the cool thing was that I found that there were these kids who could really write. You know, there were, I mean, they strung adjectives together like Edgar Allan Poe, but they could write, you know. And it was sort of this ironic, funny, mopey vocabulary that they put together, but they were literate and they were good at it. And I was like, well, we're going to be okay, you know. We're going to have a lot of people in black eye makeup, but we're going to be okay, you know. The English language will be fine. And then I went and did this book based on Shakespeare's King Lear that some of you may have read. And I had to learn Elizabethan English and then translate it into something that you guys would go, that sounds like Elizabethan English, but I understood it. And the thing that had in common with what I was doing is there was, you know, Shakespeare invented 1,800 words minimum. I mean, some people say as high as 10,000, but that sounds high to me. The Oxford English Dictionary gives him credit for 500 words that are first citations. In other words, they appear in print for the first time. I'm getting to the vampire stuff. The reason that Shakespeare could do that was because of the conditions that existed in the language. You know, it's like the 29-foot long jump. In 1968, the record for the long jump got beat by 22 inches. In the previous 75 years, it had advanced 8 inches. All the 75 years. The way that happened was the Olympics were at Mexico City, and the air was really thin. And in addition to this guy being a great jumper, he could sail farther because of the altitude being so high. And so they say that can never happen again. It's what, you know, a quantum leap. Well, the language, Shakespeare was in that same condition. The English language was this just series of indecipherable dialects all over the British Isles. And you could literally go 12 miles and not understand what somebody was saying. But then the printing press comes to England, and this guy named William Caxton in 1476, I'm getting to the vampire book, shut up. He starts putting the English language into print. And you know, translating Canterbury Tales into something that everybody can read, and Beowulf and Latin stuff, and he's the guy who's responsible for, you know, things like enough being spelled with a GH, you know, because he's like, oh, I'm out of F's, sure, GH. Seriously, there's a lot of goofy shit in the English language because William Caxton didn't have enough of those letters that day. And so over the, you know, from about 1476 through the 1500s. There's English Bibles. Three English Bibles are commissioned by the king, by Henry VIII at the time. And then Shakespeare starts popping up in the late 1500s. And that's when he's writing his plays. And they're not really being written down, but they're being performed for big audiences. So it's standardizing the language. And he obviously hit, you know, walls. He went, oh, wow, there's no word for spoon. People's coffee will remain unstirred unless I, you know what I'm saying? You know, and everybody was walking around in England and was like, why is my fork wet? That's probably not a good example. But he made up all these different words, and then about 1609 to 1611, you know, his folio of his plays finally gets written down, and the King James Bible comes out. And it's during that 135 years that the English language becomes what it is. Even though what we speak is different than Elizabethan, it's kind of, you know, you can tell it's the same language if you look at it. It's just people have pumpkin pants on when they speak it. And I realized when I went back, you know, but it was a revolution that happened. So when I went back to write Bite Me and get a sort of a refresher on Abby Normal's dialect, because I had gotten a note right after You Suck came out from some kid that said, oh, nobody said woot in over 6 months. You're so out of it. And I'm like, 6 months? Really? That's how fast it's moving. And you know, I didn't tell him there's like a year lag from the time I turn the book in to the time it comes out because, you know, it was a kid. Screw them. No, I mean for the children. So I go back to these blog sites, and the blogs are gone. I mean, the stupid kids are still there. There's like one or two lines of, you know, pooped today. But all the eloquent, funny, ironic kids that were writing paragraphs about their mopiness, they were gone. in a matter of 3 years because of texting, because of Facebook, because of Twitter. Everything had been reduced to 140 characters and the entire language had stopped. The example of this, of how fast things are moving, is the Teabagger Party. They had no idea why we were laughing at them. You know? They thought it was political. What, you hate freedom? No, you're an idiot. I'm all about freedom. I'm carrying a gun right now. You're just a nitwit. Urban Dictionary has been, this is its 10th year in existence, urbandictionary.com, where you can look up things like, what does OMFG mean? They have 4.8 million entries in 10 years. So, you know, Shakespeare's 1,800 words in a 35-year career, that's a big deal. That's a quantum leap. In 10 years, 4.8 million. Now, granted, most of those definitions are really disgusting, made-up sex acts by people who have never been laid, who just go, you know, and stuff that you just go, oh, I wish I could unknow that. But my point is, I think we're sort of at that revolution in our language, the same way we were. But instead of it being 135 years long like the first time, I think it's going to be like 10, 15 years where we're going to go, you know, the sixth graders aren't going to understand a word that the ninth graders are saying because it's a different vocabulary. And I have no point to that. I just thought it was kind of interesting. And most of the stuff I talk about, I just made up. On stage. Talk to you later. I live with the bitch. I gotta answer. The only person in the world that's not in the business that has my schedule and knows where I am right now, other than you guys. And she calls. Way to go, babe! there will be revenge.
That's all for tonight's Author on Tour. I'm Darren Foden. We have been podcasting live from the Tattered Cover Bookstore in Denver, Colorado. Authors on Tour Live has been presented by Belco Credit Union. Belco has been serving members' financial needs since 1936. Visit www.belco.org/authors.asp to learn more about how Belco can help you. Stay pod tuned in the coming weeks for many more authors as we podcast Authors on Tour.